to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice from both the church and the workplace. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, President and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
Caution to all the listeners, this is not a rerun. This is an episode that we have not had, but it's a guest that we have had on the show in the past, Dr. Brad Wagner. There are a lot of ways I could introduce Brad. We first met when he was the executive pastor of the Far Hills Church in Dayton, Ohio, and I came as an interim preacher. He was providing the leadership role. I was providing the pulpit role. I'd love to tell you the story of the first time that we were together on the front pew right before I went to preach, but I'm not going to do that today. I'm just not going to go in that direction. We then served as deans at Southern Seminary in Louisville together. He was dean of one of the graduate schools, and I was dean of the other. But the most pertinent introduction today, and of course our families are great friends, but the most pertinent introduction today is he has the number two role at Lifeway Christian Resources. Lifeway, for the uninitiated, and there are a lot of people who may not know about my role as CEO of Lifeway or Brad's role as Executive Vice President. Lifeway is, we think it's the largest Christian company in the world. We better not say that unless we've done a lot of fact check, but it's close. And all said and done, you add up the entire headcount, and there are about 5,000 employees. So there's a lot of leadership and a lot of resources that need to be led at Lifeway. And I'll probably talk about during this podcast at some point some of the ways that Brad is helping me to lead Lifeway. But I know we need to get into the topic for all the listeners about leading from the second chair. And I guess this could apply to associate pastors, mm-hmm. executive pastors, number two persons, or those who are in a staff role in churches. Yeah. So I know, Jonathan, you take it from there, and we'll welcome Brad.
Well, welcome, Brad.
It's good to be here.
Thanks for joining us again. You came on before. We talked about culture and culture of change, and we'll link to that podcast and below. But today, we're like Dr. Rainer, you mentioned, we're talking about leading from the second chair. And in the church context, we've had a lot of questions from people asking, you know, do these topics apply to me? How do they apply to me as a staff member, as an executive pastor, as an administrative pastor, as an adult minister? So we brought in the best number two we know.
That's right.
That'd be Dr. Wagner here, to talk about leading from the second chair. So you have experience here. You've also been a first chair leader. So the difference in those two roles, how has that been for you?
Well, actually, throughout most of my career, I've served in about five or six different positions now in different places. And I would say they've always been in a support role. I've never been at the top of the organizational chart. And so for 30-some years now, I have had experience serving alongside of other gifted leaders.
What's it like serving alongside the dysfunctional leadership at Lifeway Christian Resources, Brad?
Well, let's just say
where you were going to go with the location.
Let's just say it's a lot of fun. You don't want to. There is no perfect organization, and I'm not sure you want one.
But we do have fun here. How do second chair leaders effectively lead from that position, even though they may not have the position of authority, but they do have a position of influence a lot of times?
Yeah, I think in most cases, it's not an either-or proposition when it comes to authority and influence. The key foundational issue, I believe, for this entire discussion is alignment and trust. Mm-hmm. It is very, very important for me and the role that I'm in at Lifeway to be very aligned with Dr. Rainer, his leadership, his values, his vision, his directions, etc. I have to work hard, not that it's difficult to stay aligned with him, but it has to be a deliberate thing you do every day, is stay in alignment with the leader you're serving. And then, of course, the trust factor. You know, I believe that's the key to why we've served together now in three different settings, as he alluded to earlier.
Yeah.
I believe the key that's made it work so well has been the trust factor. I trust him. He trusts me. But one of the reasons I think, I don't want to put words in his mouth, one of the reasons I think he trusts me is, at least I hope he would say, that I work hard to stay aligned with his leadership.
Oh, that's absolutely true. There's hardly a day that goes by that Brad does not come by, call, or some otherwise communicate and say, I want to make sure we're on the same page before I go to this meeting. I want to make sure I'm aligned with you. I want to make certain that we're saying the same things and are not contradicting you. So in one form or another, that has been one of the most consistent things that he has said. And, you know, that raises the question then, Alignment and trust are two of the biggest issues, and I guess you cannot lead well from a second chair if you don't have both of those.
Well, in fact, I think it will be very damaging to the church or the organization if somebody in a subordinate role, in a second chair role, tries to exert leadership that's not aligned. It ends up leading to a divided church or a divided organization. Yeah, absolutely.
And as with as many irons as Lifeway has in the fire, you know, we have so many different things going on around here. If you're telling people one thing and Dr. Rainer, you're telling someone something else, there are a lot of things that can go wrong really quickly.
That's absolutely right. And it's not fair to the people you're serving.
No. And in a church context, if you have a pastor who's wanting the church to go in one direction, you have an associate pastor trying to circumvent that or even like lead in a different direction, that's just, you know, recipe for disaster in a church.
Right. I agree.
So there's some history between you two, and you've known each other. You've brought Brad here to Lifeway. But a lot of pastors, they wind up in a pastoral role where they don't get to pick their staff a lot of times, especially in smaller churches or in churches where they just may not have the power or the ability based on church structure to do so. How do you work around that?
Well, I'll let Brad address it too, but I'll simply say that if the pastor does not have any role, and as a result, a number two person or number three person comes on staff, and there's not alignment and there's not trust, you immediately have a dysfunctional situation. If you have a search committee process, if you have a congregational vote, I think it is absolutely critical that they're consulting the leader to make sure that that chemistry is taking place and that leadership synergy is taking place.
But what if the number two guy is already there and the number one comes in?
Well, what you do is you try to work and you try to make it work. I've been in situations where number two people have already been there, and I would say more times than not it has worked because the leader has often offered clarity of this is where I'm going, want to make sure we're all on the same page, and you find that out. But if it doesn't work, I have to say this very simply, it's up to one of the two of them to leave.
It can't have both, you know, for too long.
Well, as Brad talked about, he didn't use these words, but you have a two-headed monster or two, and it becomes a monster because it's two-headed.
Yeah, I have strong convictions about this topic. I believe personally that in a church setting that the staff are extensions of the senior pastor's leadership. And I know you get into various discussions on ecclesiology and church governance here, but that's been my view. And so I believe the senior pastor needs a lot of freedom to bring on board those folks, those people, those men and women in different staff roles that work alongside of him. I think that's crucial. And I think a personnel committee, a wise church is going to give the pastor that freedom to decide, you know, who's supposed to be on the bus, who's supposed to be off the bus, using the Jim Collins analogy.
And a lot of times that doesn't mean that the pastor comes in and automatically blows up the place. Give the people that are there a chance to come under that alignment and that trust and work with him.
Yeah, absolutely. I think most of the time when a pastor comes in, if he has a pastoral heart and he cares about people and he understands that staff members already have relationships with the people in the church, he doesn't come in as a dictator and start cutting off heads. He'll come in and assess the situation. He'll give it time to see if there's good chemistry, good alignment. But at the end of the day, I think he has to feel comfortable with those that are serving alongside of him.
Now, we talked about trust and alignment as two of the major keys. What about the other personality strengths, personality traits, even just workflow strengths? Do they have to be complementary? Can they be skill sets that are very similar, or do they need to kind of complement one another? Is it not really a dichotomy there?
Well, I think practically what I would say I've observed, at least in all of my experiences, that my gifts, talents, knowledge, whatever you want to label it, has always been in a complement role to the first chair, in this case, Dr. Rainer. I don't know that it has to be. I mean, I think you could have two people who are gifted in similar ways that could still make it work, again, based on trust and alignment. But usually, I think a good first chair is going to want to have people around him who have some strengths that backfill some areas that either aren't necessarily weaknesses of the first chair, but just maybe not the areas of passion. And so I think the complementary strategy works well generally.
I would give specifics of the relationship between Brad and me. I am an introvert.
Yes.
We've talked about that many times on the podcast. Brad is an extrovert. There are times that I think his smartphone is attached to his ear. He's talking to people all the time. I end conversations very quickly. Brad, let me give you an example of something that happened within the last hour and a half. Brad came by and said, hey, we need to go by and see a team meeting that's taking place in one of the divisions and just drop in. That's not my nature.
Like,
I don't,
really?
I don't just drop in. I mean, that involves me being with people. And Brad is highly extroverted, and he knows. He uses the word backfill, but I would say it's a weakness of mine. And he complements that weakness with his strength, with his extroversion. There's another one. I tend to fly high in terms of how I lead. I like high level. Brad knows I don't like too much detail. He knows I don't like a lot of paper. We even have fun with when paper comes to me, how I just hand it over to him immediately. So that's kind of a standing issue. So he not only has to be strategic, he has to be tactical when I don't want to be tactical. So those are two areas where he has been very complimentary in backfilling or filling in the weaknesses.
And another thing, you mentioned how long I've known each other. Y'all kind of like being around one another. You're good friends. It's not
that. Oh, this is getting mushy.
Yeah, don't overstate it.
But it's not that it's just a business only relationship. And I know a lot of people are, but y'all spend time together. You have vacationed together in the past.
Been a while.
You know, but you do spend time outside of work together.
Yeah.
The problem with the vacation thing is he likes to go lay on the beach, walk the beach, read. I like to go climb mountains and kill innocent animals. Oh, I shouldn't say that on a podcast, but fish. Let's just say fish.
You like
I
the
like
fish.
The fish.
We do like to do different things. He doesn't mind the beach, but I do mind the mountains because that involves not having a beach.
Kind of leading from that, how does a first chair leader recognize the type of person that he needs in the second chair? You mentioned the complimentary and helping out, you know, filling the backfilling the roles. How does one realize this person would be a good candidate, maybe this person wouldn't be?
We've mentioned two issues, and certainly complimenting is one of them. We're not talking about passing favorable words onto someone.
The bread does that pretty well.
Yeah, we're talking about being a match for one another where one has strengths and another may not. But the big issue for me, more than anything else, is can I trust him?
Yeah.
Does he have my back? Am I comfortable if I'm going to be gone for a long period of time, 1 week or 2 weeks, and he's not only the de facto leader, but the leader in my absence or in a meeting representing all of Lifeway for me, do I feel comfortable? Do I feel like he is going to represent not only me, but the whole vision of Lifeway well? If that trust is not there, it just absolutely does not work. There's another thing about a second chair, and I'll let Brad address it. I'm talking too much, but there's a sense of humility that comes with a second chair. There's something that's kind of humorous when Brad and I walk around Lifeway together. We'll pass employees, and it won't be that unusual for someone to say, hello, Dr. Rayner. And they don't even acknowledge his presence. And it's not because they like me more. It's just because you better say hello to the president. That's kind of the culture around here. Every now and then he'll say, you know, what am I, chopped liver? But Brad, you can address that issue, either of those issues in any direction you want to. But basically the trust issue and a willingness to be subservient. That's not easy for a lot of people.
Yeah. Especially in men in business roles.
That's right.
Well, Dr. Rayner's right, and you know, it's difficult to ever talk about humility. It's like, who gets to talk about humility? How do you talk about that without being the opposite of humble? But I do agree that when you're in an associate role, you just need to be comfortable with the fact that you're not going to be in the limelight most of the time. You're going to be in the background, generally speaking, and I think you got to be okay with that. I happen to think that's fairly biblical. You know, Philippians, one of my favorite verses, Philippians 2, talks about this in verses 3 and 4. It says, do nothing out of rivalry or conceit, but with humility consider others as more important than yourselves. Everyone should look out not only for his own interest, but for the interest of others. I think to be effective in a second chair, you have to genuinely care that you're helping the first chair succeed. And at the end of the day, it really is not about you. Now, in my case, Dr. Rayner's always been very good to give me kudos, even publicly, and to be appreciative. And so I always feel acknowledged. But yeah, you've got to be willing to take a back seat in some settings.
Well, speaking of that, a lot of people wonder if they're better suited for a first role or second role. And I know we had a discussion this morning before we came in here about this. And you say it's not really about an either or, but It's about being available to be either or, not whether you're meant to be one or the other.
Yeah, the conversation you're alluding to is when I first entered into the ministry environment many years ago, I heard a lot of people use labels. I'm called to preach, or I'm called to youth ministry, or I'm called to China, or I'm, you know, some very clear label. I've always been a little careful about that. I think we're called to availability. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't labels along the way that fit, but we've got to hold some of that loosely. I'm not uncomfortable. I don't think I would be uncomfortable being in the first chair if I felt like God was leading me that way. But I haven't planned my life. I've tried to respond to what I perceive to be the will of God, and it's always been in a support role. But I haven't labeled it that way. It's just more of availability to God's guidance.
Brad, this may take a humorous direction, and you're welcome to do that, but share some idiosyncrasies of the first chair at Lifeway that you have observed from the second chair and how you have had to deal with those.
Well, there's a lot of interesting...
Interesting is a great word.
Yeah, there are
too.
A lot of interesting characteristics of both of us. Actually, we share some humor in common, and so we enjoy helping each other survive meetings after meetings. Dr. Rayner, let's just say that he is not interested in prolonged conversation, and sometimes I'm the guilty party in that matter. And so you can watch his nonverbals, and you can watch him begin to check out. And sometimes I've been able to like kick him under the chair to say, there'll be somebody talking around on the other side of the table, and I'll kind of kick him so that he starts to pay attention. Occasionally that works. Usually he just kicks back. But I have on occasion had to try to help him stay focused. That would be one idiosyncrasy.
Brad has helped me with an awareness, and I mess up at it. I messed up at it particularly yesterday. Particular incident in a meeting where with a prolonged meeting, I lose my focus.
Yeah.
And if I lose my focus, if someone does not know me, they're going to be personally offended that I am not following them and that I am not with them. And there was something that happened in a meeting yesterday that I had to admit that I was at fault because I was checking out. I was just fading, and I start doing either fading type things or weird type things when I start fading, like handing pieces of paper to Brad or beginning to look other directions or send him texts and say I'm dying and things like that. If people know me, that's good, but then there were people in the room that did not know me well, and so that was not good. And so I have to be reminded, and he helps me in that direction a good bit. Another thing that I've got to say, and again, we're making this more specific than broad, and we can bring it into a more broad application before we wrap up. I am not only an introvert, I'm thin-skinned, relatively thin-skinned. I think Brad would argue that I'm not as thin-skinned as I sometimes claim I am, but I am relatively thin-skinned. And being the president of this organization and being thin-skinned is not a very good situation. So Brad is taking a lot of the issues that come to my office and helping me to deal with them. In other words, he's helping me deal with the major critical issues. So Brad, I don't know if that's how you perceive me, but I certainly perceive myself that way.
Well, yeah, thinking of you in terms of being thin-skinned, it really takes some clarification because I think a lot of thin-skinned people, they escape. They run from the problem. You don't run from problems. You don't like them, and sometimes it bothers you, and sometimes you need a day or two to kind of calm down and get over it. But you come right back and you face the reality. And so in that sense, I think you actually display some thick skin ultimately, even though it's not a fun process. But I don't mind some of those challenges quite the same way. He's the guy that he's at the top. So he has to deal with all these problems. Sometimes I find critics a challenge. Although I'm not going to overstate it, it's never that fun.
But. No.
And sometimes I need to bring Brad back in on these with dealing with these critics. And, you know, he comes in and says, do I have permission to kill them?
And I, no.
And I said, no. But then there's sometimes that I say, granted. Yeah. And I just say, whatever happens.
Because I fantasize about being a Christian version of Jack Bauer on the show 24, but that doesn't usually I'm not allowed to act that way in this setting.
Well, I want to tack one more thing on. You mentioned the humility in the second chair, and that kind of ties back to that trust that we talked about at the top. It's not just trust from one to two, but it's trust from two to one. I mean, that's a two-way street, because you have to trust. Basically, you're trusting, as the number two guy here at Lifeway, as Tom Rainer goes, more than likely as Brad Wagner goes. So you have to trust that Tom Rainer's leading Lifeway in the right direction, the correct direction, as well a church pastor would. I mean, if a pastor or associate pastor is trusting the pastor to lead the church in a right way and in a growing way so the church thrives and ministry is done, he's got a lot of trust. He's got a lot of skin in the game there from that number two role to, you know, toward the number one.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, this comment is aimed more toward people who may be listening who are in the first chair. I believe it really, really is helpful when a first chair leader, a senior pastor or whatever, understands that the associate people on his team, they have a lot of skin in the game, as you just stated, that, you know, they've hooked their, you know, their wagon to his train, so to speak, and they have a lot at stake. And so I think it's helpful for a first leader to realize, hey, they've put a lot of trust in the first chair, and they're willing to take the risks that come associated with that. And that doesn't always mean that second chair people have remained faithful and loyal, but generally speaking, it's good to view those who are on your team as loyal followers who want you to succeed.
Let me, before we run out of time, I want to ask Brad probably the most common question that I get from staff, church staff, second chair, third chair, whatever, that is not the first chair, and it is this: I do not like the vision of my pastor. I think it's wrong. I've tried to convince him of it. He has not listened to me. What do I do?
Yeah, I've been in that situation before as well. Obviously, it depends on what the issue is. You know, there are some things that are non-negotiables. I think any person in any staff role, there may be some things that take place in a ministry environment that are just non-negotiables. And if the first chair is violating something that's considered non-negotiable, a clear biblical imperative, for instance, then they have to decide if they can remain on the team. But a lot of the other issues are not of that magnitude. It's sometimes more of preferences. And and I would say that a second chair person doesn't have the luxury of determining all of those preferences. You can share your opinion with the first chair. You can express a different point of view. And but at the end of the day, if you can't align with the first chair, then it's your responsibility, I think, to move to some other job somewhere else.
Yep. Good advice.
This podcast has been brought to you by Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary's Doctor of Ministry program. If you want more out of your ministry, want to study with a world-class faculty, and need to stay where you currently serve, the DMIN at Southeastern is the answer for you. Visit sebts.edu/DMIN for more information. That's going to do it for this week's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Any final closing thoughts, Dr. Rainer?
There are oftentimes when we close a podcast, especially one that's been as meaningful as this one and the great information that Brad Wagner shared with us, that I want to remind the listeners of two major takeaways. And the two major takeaways here are: what are the two things that should take place between a first and second chair? Trust and alignment. And if you don't get anything else out of this podcast, take that with you. Trust and alignment are key to the relationship between the two.
Thanks again for joining us, Dr. Wagner.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
And thank you for listening to Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us online at tomrainer.com.